My name is Sean Fennell. I'm a VP of Regional Sales at NCM Investments, covering the York and Durham regions. I want to thank you for listening in today to the most recent installment in our NCM podcast series. I'm going to be joined today by Keith Leslie, Portfolio Manager on numerous mandates for NCM. Keith is a 20-year veteran of Canadian equities and has a CFA designation. And today we're going to be focusing on Keith's core Canadian fund. This mandate is part of NCM's family of core funds, which aim to provide investors with low volatility, high active share, and low fees, including our flat fee pricing and Z series. With that, let me welcome Keith. Keith, thank you very much for joining us today. Really excited to get your thoughts in what is a pretty troublesome market.
I appreciate the invite. Thank you.
So why don't we start here? I think a lot of advisors would like to know a little bit more about your investment philosophy and methodology, particularly given your 20 years experience in Canadian equities as a quantitative manager. Could you speak briefly to your process and what characteristics in a company you find most attractive?
Sure, I can do that. So when I first entered the business in 1998, pretty much throughout my career, I've been heavily influenced by value managers. I've been lucky enough to have worked with some of the best portfolio managers in the country. You know, really, value investing just seems to make sense to me. Not only worry about what something does, but don't forget to check the price tag. Paying lower multiples to get similar attributes just seems logical. I know that sounds kind of funny coming from a momentum manager, as momentum is typically associated with growth. But I've found that I've been able to marry the two together to be quite successful. Kind of as I gained experience as well, I realized that you need to focus just as much or almost as much on growth to avoid some of the pitfalls of value traps and deep value investing, and to be able to pivot if the market conditions dictate. Understanding that not every stock looks good on all the criteria is important. So I need to look at everything more at the portfolio level and be willing to look through some attributes at the stock level. In other words, best by an example, if the overall portfolio is trading at, say, 12 times earnings, when the market's trading at 16 times, I can actually add a stock to the portfolio with a higher multiple, increasing maybe the overall portfolio to, say, 13 times. I'm still a value manager when compared to the market, but by doing that, I might be able to help the other characteristics of the fund, such as growth rate, like increasing the growth rate, bringing a higher yield or lower beta, just to name a few examples. I'm always going to worry about what I'm paying, but I've learned that there's more to value investing than just buying the cheapest stocks without regard to other factors. It's often worth paying higher multiples to improve the visibility and overall portfolio quality. In my early years, I created a back-tested screen that I believe gives the greatest mathematical probability of success. And by success, I'm going to define that as achieving the fund's investment objective. So this test may, or this back-test, this screen may vary according to the mandate that I'm running. And in terms of getting a little more specific, the screen that I run is about 25% earnings momentum. It's just typically using earnings surprises and analyst estimate revisions, typically on a three-month basis for annual estimate revisions and the most recent month for quarterly estimate revisions. So I'm 25% earnings momentum, 25% price momentum. On the price momentum side, I'm really looking at three factors: three-month price change, nine-month price change, and price change off the high. I love buying new highs. I'm not a technical analyst, but from a technical point of view, there's no resistance. And when you run tests going back to 1985, the best performing factor, believe it or not, is nine-month price change, if you could buy a stock on just one factor. In other words, if you could buy on one factor, buy the stock that's gone up the most over the last 9 months. So price momentum is certainly a factor. So again, to reiterate, I guess 25% earnings momentum, I'm 25% price momentum, and the remaining 50% of what I look at is a little different from many of the other momentum guys out there and girls. I'm 50% qualitative factor. So by qualitative, I refer to having a high return on equity, a solid and preferably increasing yield, reasonable cash flow to debt levels, good growth, good expected growth, strong free cash flow yield, low beta, low PE, etc. So all kinds of different factors. Essentially, we look at these characteristics on an absolute basis, on a historic basis, as well as an industry relative basis. So to really explain it better, I guess, essentially we screen a Canadian universe of about 700 names for ones that have the best momentum. That drops the list down to about 250 names, and from that we create a portfolio of 35 to 45 names that's growing faster, is more profitable, has better cash flow, has a higher yield, lower debt, and lower beta than the TSX. We do not look to maximize any one factor, as we look to have a set of characteristics that look as good or better than our benchmark and our peer group. Having said all that, being a momentum manager, I will usually avoid names with poor momentum characteristics. Finally, I'm a believer in trading around core positions to add value, as well as switching from one company to one of its peers if the market dictates. For example, most managers will not move from one bank, insurance company, telecom, utility to another, but if valuations diverge, I'll often make that switch just to pick up a little bit better valuation, provided that the other characteristics look similar.
Thanks, Keith. I love to hear how you initially started out looking through very much a value lens, but find that 9-month price change to be that, you know, historically over the last several decades, the single best factor by which to invest. I think that leads very nicely into this next question, which pertains to the nature of the fund that you're running. So you're running NCM Core Canadian, core implying that this is a mandate that can be depended upon through multiple parts of a market cycle. We're obviously in very uncertain times for markets. How do you reflect this in your portfolio construction? And what are some companies that you own that assist in achieving this objective?
The NCM Core Canadian is really designed to have less volatility in the market. We get there by buying lower volatility stocks in lower volatility sectors rather than chasing high flyers. From time to time, it may result in short-term underperformance and strong bull markets, but we believe that we'll get to the same place or even higher in the long run with less of the roller coaster ride along the way. As mentioned in my previous podcast, which I believe is available on our website, we've done extensive work on analyzing sectors over the last 20 years. We've examined their year-by-year returns in up and down markets, their standard deviation, and their consistency. This has a significant impact on our portfolio construction, as we want to be overweight to consistent outperforming sectors at the expense of the underperforming, more volatile sectors. To just briefly summarize some of our findings, over the last 20 years, with year 20 being the first quarter of this current year, so not a full year, just a quarter, so 19 years plus one quarter, the market's been up more than 10%, 50% of the calendar years. So half the time, 10 of those 20 time periods, the market's been up more than 10%. And it's been down more than 10% only four times, or 20% of the calendar years. So bad years are going to happen, but the general direction of the market has been up. In that time period, only two sectors have averaged over 10% per year. And I think it surprised some people that those two sectors are staples and real estate. Staples have never delivered a calendar year of minus 10% or worse. Utilities have only once, and real estate, communication services, and financial services only twice. Communication services has certainly been the most consistent. It's been up 10% of the, more than 10% in a calendar year, 65% of the time over the past 20 years, and real estate and industrial, 60% of the time. And then from a protection side, there's been seven down years in that time period. Staples have posted positive returns 71% of the time in those down years. So that kind of all leads to our portfolio construction. In NCM Core Canadian, we tend to be overweight always. Staples, real estate, utilities, and communication services. We tend to always be underweight energy, healthcare, discretionary, and non-gold materials. And then we have some weights that vary based on market conditions, based on our screens that we run. That would be gold, industrials, technology, I'm going to put financials here just because it is 30% of the index. So we always have a heavy weight in financials, but it's difficult to be too overweight. We're typically only a little bit overweight if we are, and we're typically around market weight financials. Before I get to a few of the names, I just want to briefly discuss the Canadian market. It's something that, you know, we've had a lot of conversations on this year. And really what's driven the Canadian market. In times like this, you would typically think that a low beta mandate or a value mandate might outperform in the down market. And really the one thing in Canada that's happened this year that's created a huge, I guess, positive for the market, but probably a negative for many managers, is Shopify. So I'm taking a quick look at Shopify. I pulled up the numbers just because I was a little interested. Shopify has added year to date, it's added about 2.2% return to the TSX. It's up almost about 100%. So it has been a significant mover of the index. But drilling down into the company, so in 2019, so calendar 2019, Shopify had $2.1 billion in revenues, $2.1 billion in revenues. That means it's trading at more than 50 times revenues. It has a similar market cap, depending on the day, but very similar market cap to Royal Bank. Put that in perspective. Again, we're going to repeat that one more time. Shopify had 2.1 billion Canadian in revenues. Royal Bank had 12.9 billion in earnings in fiscal 2019. That's about 1.1 billion in profit per month. In other words, in less than 2 months, Royal Bank has in earnings the total revenues of Shopify that they have similar valuations. This just doesn't make sense to me or many other managers. It happens from time to time. It's not a slam on Shopify. You know what? They are a debt-free company. They've done a lot of things right. Just the valuation doesn't make sense, and certainly for a low beta manager or value manager, they just can't get there. The point I'm really trying to make is that even in a market drawdown, low beta value, low volatility investing does not necessarily prevail, but we believe it should in the long run. Bottom line is, I guess, that to answer the question, in NCM Core Canadian, we're really looking to own boring stocks that have low volatility, predictable earnings, and some visibility to grow in the current market conditions. You asked for a couple names. I'm going to rattle off about 10 of them, just some of my favorite names in no particular order at this time. I really like a company called Cascades. They're paper products and packaging. Beta Gold, it brings some gold exposure. Ange Health Systems on the technology side. Stantec on the industrial side. I like Northland Power. PCE, Couche-Tard, another technology name in Constellation Software. Right now, the valuation seems low on compared to its peers on Scotiabank, so I like Scotiabank. I'm going to just throw one energy name. I'm typically not there, but I have one energy producer that screens quite well for me, and it's a lower volatility name, a little smaller cap in nature, but Canacol Energy is one that looks pretty good if you want to be in the energy space with a little lower volatility name.
Thanks for that, Keith. Great to hear some context about what's actually driven Canadian markets over the last several years. Now, we've seen companies using the pandemic to better set themselves up for future quarters earnings. You know, RBC comes to mind with some significant loan loss provisions a couple weeks back, which may have cleared out some of the plumbing. As a quantitative PM, how do these types of adjustments impact your modeling of a company, and how have you adapted to that?
Yeah, you know what, this in these uncertain times, we certainly had to make some changes. Typically, earnings surprise is a very significant in our work, but it's a little less important now as companies are reporting numbers with very different levels of aggressiveness. Some of the bad numbers are actually good, and some of the good numbers are actually bad. Depending on how conservative management teams are. We're looking for companies reporting conservative numbers and trying to create lower hurdles, making it easier going forward, rather than companies blaming a bad Q1 on COVID-19, when it was actually business as usual for the first 2.5 of 3 months. We're monitoring growth rates and estimate revisions like we always do, even though many companies have pulled their guidance. So this is a little bit less relevant right now. So really what we're doing is we're spending more time and focusing more on dividends, their payout ratios, whether they can be increased, their sustainability. And really, we love the outlook for companies that are increasing their dividends. It's certainly something that we are looking for. There's not too many of them, but something that I think you can find companies with the comfort to raise their dividend in this market, then we like the prospects going forward. Models are really made to be adjusted for market conditions. We always look at the same factors. We continue to monitor them, but there's definitely been a shift in our emphasis. We're trading more around core positions, and certainly price momentum and yield is where we're more focused these days, given the uncertainty by management teams of their future, which obviously makes it harder for us to figure out what the future looks like.
So last question for you, Keith. You run your strategy with a fairly high active share, difficult to do as a 100% Canadian fund. How did this come about, and how does this benefit a portfolio like yours during such challenging times?
Good question. I think probably the best thing to do before we get into active share is really have a discussion about active versus passive management, and because that leads right into active share and whether it matters. And really the best way to talk about active versus passive management is through an example. And I'm going to give you a dramatic example that really isn't going to happen, but it just kind of goes to the point of the main difference between active and passive management. So if I were to look at banks, banks typically trade at 8x earnings to 12x earnings, depending on the bank, the point of the market cycle. And typically, Royal Bank and TD Bank are at the higher end of the multiple range. The other banks typically trade a slightly lower multiple. But suppose today, both banks, we wake up this morning, both banks are trading at 10x earnings. But for some reason, Royal Bank doubles today. There's no news, just Royal Bank doubles overnight. An active manager, or during the day, I guess, an active manager would likely sell the Royal Bank and buy more TD Bank, as an example, because the next day, one of two things is likely going to happen, given that banks are not quite a commodity, but pretty close to interchangeable on the surface. So one of two things is going to happen the next day or over the next few days. Royal's either going to return to 10x earnings, thereby dropping 50%, or TD will grow into the new bank norm of 20x earnings, which will lead to a double for TD. The active manager is going to trade out of the Royal Bank and into TD Bank, maybe other banks, hoping that this new world is going to have higher multiples on banks. That's what an active manager is going to do. The passive fund will actually do nothing because they're passive. They just hold the index. I mean, they're now going to have a 12% weight in Royal Bank instead of 6. In other words, Royal Bank has become a bigger weight just because it went up. If Royal Bank returns to 10x, they're going to lose all those gains. And if TD goes up to 20x, they're going to miss out on an opportunity. Of course, as I mentioned earlier, this is a drastic example, and it's unlikely, but it holds true at smaller levels as well. The idea is that in passive investing, your biggest exposure is to the biggest names based solely on the fact that they're big, nothing else. Active investing analyzes the underlying fundamentals and numbers to determine if it's a good investment. Now, having said all of that, both have their pros and cons, and that's a discussion for another session and probably a full session. But as an active manager, it's difficult for me to own something just because it's big, regardless of momentum, growth, or valuation. Passive investing can work for a period of time, like it did, if you can think back to 1999 with Nortel when it was 30% of the index, but I believe that a company's financial results eventually have to matter. That's just active versus passive. I'll just have a quick description of active share. Active share is a measure of how a fund looks different from its benchmark or from a passively managed index or ETF. I won't bore you with the math, but it's a percentage where the higher the number, the more different a fund is. In bigger markets like the U.S., a high active share might be around 70%. In Canada, it's a little more difficult to figure out what a high active share is, especially if you factor in similar risk levels and the large cap requirements. But to get into a little more detail on this, in Canada, the top 10 weighted names make up about 38% of the TSX. The top 50 names make up about 78% of the TSX. But to have high active share, you typically have to not own many of these 50 names, be overweight many of the names, or have some sort of combination of the both. If you don't own them, there are not enough other companies in Canada of similar size to meet the requirements of a large cap fund. If you own all of them, your active share is going to be somewhere around 30%. So as a active manager, to create a high active share, you have to find a way to balance the two. Some Canadian equity funds get around this by posting a high active share by owning U.S. securities despite having an all-Canadian benchmark. That is one way to increase a fund's active share, but it does not seem reasonable. It defeats the whole purpose of the active share calculation, in my opinion. So typically, as I said, in Canada, a high active share, a fund needs to go down market cap to mid and small cap companies at the expense of owning the top 50 names, which are Canada's biggest companies. This works improving the active share number, but adds a different level of risk. And just for simplicity, the mid and small cap indices are both down more than twice the total return of the large cap index year to date. So, you know, it takes on risk to have a very high active share in Canada. I think the bottom line is it's very, very difficult to have a very high active share in Canada and remain large cap focused. But you can still have a higher active share. It's just high in Canada is a little different from high in the U.S. So in NCM Core Canadian, we have an active share of just under 60%, which I believe is very high for a 100% Canadian content large cap Canadian equity fund. Of the top 10 names that make up 38% of the TSX, we own 7 of them. They make up about 25% of our portfolio. Of the top 50 names in the TSX, again, that makes up about 78%. We only own half of them, or 25, and that comprises about 70% of our portfolio, but at very different weightings. The TSX is about 87% large cap, we're about 80. The TSX is around 11% mid cap, we're about 15. And the TSX is about 2% small cap, we're about 5% held among three holdings. So we're not all that, we're not significantly different on that front in terms of size. To really answer the second part of this question is, how does that assist us? Having a high active share is really a diversification tool. Owning two funds with an active share in the 30% range or two passive ETFs doesn't add much in terms of diversification to a client's portfolio. We believe that with our active share where it is, not only are we a good standalone investment, we're an excellent complement to an index fund or passive ETF in terms of diversifying Canadian large cap exposure and bringing a different investing style to our investors.
Keith, that's great. I think Nortel at 30% of the index is a great example of why having active management, particularly active management that has high active share, can be so important in portfolio construction. I want to say a big thank you again for your time and your insights, both into the fund, but also the Canadian market and Canadian equities overall. A reminder to our listeners that this is a 100% Canadian equity strategy, and it is available with flat fee pricing through NCM's Series Z. For any further questions, please contact your NCM wholesaler directly or email sales@ncminvestments.com. Thank you again to all our listeners. Be well and stay safe.